Welcome to another round of the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. Thanks for accessing us however you are doing so, large device or small. For those who may not know, SDHAM is the morning show attached to the Soccer Down Here Network, and you can start your day with us, get all of the news that you may have missed in the overnight, and get you ready for everything that's going on in the day across the planet when it comes to the beautiful game. And it is local, it is domestic, it is statewide, it is regional, it is national and international, all in one place with our list of experts, friends, pundits, highlights, analysis, opinions, all of that in one place, and that is SDHAM Monday through Friday. You can catch it on the SDH YouTube channel. It's Soccer Down Here. You can also follow along on X, on Twitch, and at the NSBN Network. And you can catch all that stuff live. And then after it is done being live in its taped versions, you can catch it always on the YouTube channel. And then the audio version, in whole and in parts, depending on pundits and guests, can be found on your favorite podcatchers. You can get there, our head end being Spreaker, and you can follow along on all your favorite podcatchers. Like and subscribe and find out what's going on every single day here on SDHAM. This week, we're going to be focusing a little bit on what's going on in Miami, and I mean Miami this time, because Atlanta United is taking on Inter Miami at New Stadium, and I mean that in both word and deed. Inter Miami, Messi and friends, they are hosting Atlanta, and that is a 7:40 kick on Saturday night, helping us with the analysis and asking what is going on recently with Inter Miami. Michelle Kaufman, the beat writer, one of the long and esteemed writers with the Miami Herald, the beat writer for Inter Miami. She is with them every step of the way, and we get to find out what has been going on this season with Inter Miami. She is first up in the batting order. Second, it is going to be half of the Apple TV crew that it's calling the match, Callum Williams, and Callum's kind of busy right now. He is in the process of moving his family from New York to Kansas City, and so, of course, what happens when you're in Kansas City? What game are you assigned? The first one is the one in New York. So he starts his weekend in the Bronx with NYCFC and Nashville, which by the end of 90+2 wasn't the most exciting match on Friday Night Football. But he catches a flight, heads down to Miami, and he gets to, along with Kalen Carr, let everybody know what's going on with Atlanta United and Inter Miami. He's batting second, batting third also for Apple TV. It's Ross Smith. Ross also in the process of moving from his longtime home of Nashville back home to Ontario. And we find out what's on his mind. It's a little bit of music. We discuss that a little bit. And we also get into Portland and the Loons. That is his match with Tony Husband coming up this weekend on Saturday on Apple TV. So it is Ross Smith. It is Callum Williams. And batting leadoff, it is Michelle Kaufman, beat writer, Inter Miami, Miami Herald, letting us know what's been going on this season, where they are 11 points back of Nashville SC heading into the weekend. You about hanging out down there with all these kinds of things. First and foremost, thanks for dropping by on a Thursday, especially getting ready for a match day. How was your transfer deadline day?
Well, it's still ongoing because they haven't announced yet. There's deals that I know have happened that are completed that they have not announced yet, but I know that they've happened because I've spoken to people on the inside and they're done. Noah Allen went to the Chicago Fire. That's a done deal that has not been announced yet. A $3 million transfer. You know, a lot of the money is going to be paid in 27 rather than 26. It's all that convoluted, arcane MLS rules that nobody could possibly understand. Mm-hmm. We're not going to discuss it because the people listening to this show will fall asleep, but
no, they won't.
Okay. And then, and then there's another signing that's coming that also is a done deal that has not been announced, which is a guy that was loaned to Atlanta earlier in the year, which is a Paraguayan World Cup player, Matias Galarza, who's coming on loan from River Plate. And I don't know, I looked up, I read about him, and I don't see that he's done a whole lot with River Plate or with Atlanta. So I'm not sure what the excitement would be there. But anyway, I guess time will tell. I think he had a good World Cup, but I think he didn't do too much in Atlanta from what I could see, and he has not done too much in River Plate, but I guess he's maybe going to look for a new start here with Messi. Everybody wants to play with Messi, so he's the latest in line.
Galarza intel is that he had one assist in 13 appearances, all comps with Atlanta United. They had him on the left-hand side of the attack in the midfield, and it took a little while for Matias Galarza to integrate. They wanted to pair him with Miguel Almiron on the left-hand side because of the relationship with Paraguay.
Yeah.
And it took a little while for that engine to turn. You could see the promise that was there, but the loan parameters that were attached with Galarza, the inking of it to make it permanent, I don't think it would have fit in Atlanta's cap structure at the time. And it was a pretty expensive signing if it was going to be turned into a permanent. And that's why he was returned to River Plate.
Right, right. Okay. Well, I mean, I trust Tata and I trust Chris Henderson and I trust Tata. And so if they thought he was good enough to bring in there, I'm sure he's got promise. So he's coming. They haven't announced it yet, but that's a done deal from what I hear. So, yeah.
And then there's Riquelme Filippi.
Yes, Palmeiras. A 19-year-old. Yeah, another one, 19-year-old kid from Brazil, plays for Palmeiras. He's a winger. I'm assuming he's a fast winger. He's 19 years old, so he's going to have younger legs than a lot of the people on this team who are in their mid to late 30s, pushing 40. So, they could use some youth and some speed on the wings. So, yeah, so the signings that are coming in are Galarza and Felipe and Riquelme Filippi. Mm-hmm. And then the ones going out were Noah Allen to Chicago, David Ruiz to New York Red Bull.
How do you keep all of this straight with this roster, with the ins and the outs and the financials and everything? It seems like it is a masterful challenge every single season.
Yeah. Well, I don't even try to understand the financials. It's, I think they're just doing financial gymnastics. You know what I mean? They find a way. The rules are so, like I said before, arcane. I mean, all the TAM and GAM and, they can have this much money for this year, but then they can only have $3 million that they can add in GAM. So they have to, if they get a signing, like from what I understand, Noah Allen is a $3 million GAM deal, but it has to start as a loan because they can't have the money until 27. They don't want the money in 26 because that puts them over the limit for 26. So they loan him until December. And then in January, it becomes a permanent. And then they get that $3 million for their 27 additional GAM that gets added to the $3.26 million GAM that the league, is anyone awake still?
Oh, absolutely.
I just think I don't even try to explain it too much in my stories because it would take way too many paragraphs to explain all of these deals. It's just, and then the DPs and then the under 22 initiatives and then the homegrowns and it seems like every person on the roster has a unique separate category, and then there's Messi. Who understands that financial? That's just, that's a cash cow that cannot be explained. So yeah, I don't even try to get too much into the financials. It's just too complicated.
Well, but I think that it's what we're seeing is that the front office is by challenging the current rule structure, the laws that, GAM and TAM and Garber Bucks and all those kinds of things. I give the front office a lot of credit for that gymnastics where they can, sit there and it's like, okay, well, if we do this here and this here and this here, I think you get to challenge the rest of the league to try to sit there and say, okay, well, if you want to do this and follow us down this road to where Major League Soccer can, bring in players of what we're doing, here's kind of the way to do it. So I give the front office, even though there is a lot of mathematical gymnastics, I give them a lot of credit for going down this road to figure it out to where everybody can fit. in quotation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're very ambitious. Jorge Mas, you know, he would love nothing more than to just open things up, you know, and MLS, there really are two camps of owners. You know, there are the ownership groups that want to just open it up and let's outbid each other and let's go at it the way they do in other sports. And then there are the ones that are clinging to that single entity parity, you know, 1998 MLS model where everybody is the same and we're all going to make money and share it and nobody's going to be great. There's not going to be any super team. There's not going to be any terrible team. Everybody's going to be kind of mediocre. You know, and Jorge Mas and Jose Mas, David Beckham, that group, they definitely are in the let's just do it. I mean, we're owners. We want to make money. We want our team to win. And they are willing to spend money. I mean, they are privately funding that $300 million stadium that just opened. That is a privately funded stadium, $300 million. And, you know, they brought in Lionel Messi, which was miraculous. I never thought that could happen, even though Jorge Mas kept saying to me, Michelle, I'm doing this. I'm telling you, you watch. He kept saying, epic, epic. It's going to be epic. Just wait. Just mark my words. And the day he signed, he called me and he said, what did I tell you? I told you I was going to do it. And his line that he said to me that day, I was in Paris on vacation, by the way, on June 7th, 2023. I remember the date that Lionel Messi announced that he's coming because I knew that it was, I knew that it might happen. I still didn't think it would, but I knew it was kind of going to happen. And things always happen when I'm on vacation. In fact, the other beat writers have all marked down my vacations on their calendars because they know that there's going to be big MLS news when Michelle is on vacation. So the first thing that happened was I was on an airplane to Paris with my husband on June 1st of that year, and they fired Phil Neville, the coach, while I was on the plane. So I said, okay, this is not good. I wrote the story. I was on the airplane Wi-Fi, always a big mistake, but I always do it. I was on the plane Wi-Fi, and I wrote my story about Phil Neville being fired while I was on the plane to Paris. And then I just prayed and I said, please, Leo Messi, if you want to come here, fine, but don't do it over the next 10 days because I'm on vacation in France. Please don't do it over the next 10 days. So the first 6 days went by and I was fine. And then on the seventh day, I was literally, I'm not even kidding, I'm not joking, under the Eiffel Tower. We had just gone to Musée d'Orsay, to the museum. We were taking pictures under the Eiffel Tower, and I got a phone call, and it was from Jorge Mas. And he said, Michelle, where are you right now? Are you near a computer? And I said, no, I'm in Paris. I'm on vacation. He said, you need to be near a computer because remember what I told you is going to happen? It's going to happen today. And I said, oh, my God. So anyway, ever since that day, things have been really crazy with this team. But this is all a long anecdote to tell you that Jorge Mas is an extremely ambitious person. And what he said to me that day under the Eiffel Tower on my cell phone was, never get between a Cuban and his dream. So, you know, his dream was to bring Messi here. He befriended Jorge Messi, Leo's dad, who just passed away. Yeah. He really became buddy-buddy with him over a three-year span and was able to persuade that family to come to Miami. And this club has never been the same since, but he's not satisfied. He wants to keep bringing in names and keep, you know, making money. They have to make money because they have to pay for that $300 million stadium. So, yeah, they're going to do whatever they can. And I know a lot of people around the league think that, and they did that first year, there were some rule breakings that went on with the previous previous before Chris Henderson got here. But I don't think that they're breaking rules. I really think that they are just working within the rules in a very creative way, shall we say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, personally, sidebar, pause, I can't wait for the encore because Lionel Messi, we know he's not going to, well, but never tell Leo that he can't do anything, but there will be a day when he gets to be 72 or 73 years old when he can't play in Major League Soccer anymore. what do you do for an encore? And I think that that's the pressure that's attached to the Moss brothers and David Beckham. Once we get to that day of Lionel Messi wanting to hang it up, you know, across the board domestically and what have you, I'm intrigued as to what the encore will be for Inter Miami. Right now, maybe, and I say this somewhat tongue in cheek, why'd you build the new barn? You're 4-2-4 at home, when you're gangbusters on the road, and you're average at home. What's going on at home this year?
With their record.
Yeah.
Well, they, at the beginning, I mean, I really think the team was not that bad at the beginning. They were getting ties. They were not winning. This last stretch, they had a 5-game winless streak before they made the coaching change. Right. They needed to make this coaching change. Guillermo Hoyos, he was a caretaker coach. He's Messi's godfather. Basically, he's a very close friend of the Messi family. He's known Messi since he was 14. He was in the front office. Javier Mascherano walked out with his staff, which for personal reasons, so did Tata Martino. Two coaches in a row, Tata Martino having won the supporter shield with this club, with Messi missing for 2.5 months, they still won the supporter shield, broke the record for most points in league history. They got beat by Atlanta in the first round of those playoffs. It was not, my opinion, it was not Tata's fault. Okay, Atlanta played that series great. Brad Guzan played out of his mind and was stopping everything that Lionel Messi was throwing at him. And they lost in the first round. And for personal reasons, Tata leaves. Never explained why, just said he's leaving for personal reasons. And a year later is back in coaching. Next up, Javier Mascherano. Another Argentine coach who had, you know, the seal of approval, shall we say, from Messi, because they're not going to bring in a coach who he doesn't approve of.
Right.
They bring in his Barcelona teammate, his former Argentina national team teammate. He had very little to no experience. He had no professional experience. He would only coach Argentina youth teams. No experience. They win the cup in his first year. With Javier Mascherano, they win the MLS Cup in his first year, having no experience prior. 7 games into his second season, he walks out with his whole staff and says, I'm done, for personal reasons.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You can all read between the lines. This is a difficult job. This is a difficult job. So what do? They, for the interim, they just put Guillermo Hoyos in there. He's a company man. He's a Messi guy. They bring him in. I guess maybe he wanted a shot, or they wanted to give him a shot. The team did well at the beginning, but then it started showing that he was not a good fit for this job. It's a high pressure job. I don't really think he knew what he was doing as far as tactics, substitutions. Definitely not that great of a communicator or motivator. You know, I'm not saying he's not a good guy,
right,
and he's a company guy. He is true and true loyal to this club, to the point that they've hired a new coach. Last Thursday, they hired a new coach, Keely Gonzalez, another Argentinian from Messi's hometown of Rosario. So they had Tata, and then they had Mascherano, and then they have Hoyos. And now they're going to have Keely Gonzalez, another Argentine from Messi's hometown. He doesn't have his visa yet. He doesn't have his work papers. Guillermo Hoyos has chosen to stay on and continue being the caretaker until the new coach comes. So what happened during that stretch and what happened at home is, I just think the team really fell into a funk. The team fell into a funk, and Guillermo Hoyos couldn't get them out of it. And so they decided they're going to go a different direction for the last 13 games of this season, and they hire Keely Gonzalez. We're still waiting for him to come. I don't think he's going to be here for the Saturday game against Atlanta.
Yeah.
They're saying maybe next week, but I don't think he's going to be here. I think Guillermo Hoyos is going to be back on the sideline against Atlanta.
And traditionally, you know, with Inter Miami, you can get into those 5-4 games because they've been exposed at the back a great deal, especially yes. with if you have speed that you can either work down the sides or get in behind. You know, look, I'll say this. Maxi Falcone's got a great head of lettuce, but there are times when he gets absolutely burned at the back. And it seems like there are times where Messi wants to put this team on his shoulders and he's just going to, it's like, look, I'll do this myself. Well, I'll outscore people. And you have what you had against a team like Montreal where you put 7 on the board, but then you could give up 4 or 5 the other way, whether it's Dane St. Clair or Rocco Rios Novo and Ned. It just seems like if you can find ways to have speed go against that back line, you could turn it into a shootout and it could be a long day for Inter Miami on a daily basis.
Oh, definitely. And also defensively, well, there are a couple of things that happen offensively. First of all, when you play Messi and Suarez together, they are lethal, you know, as far as attackers. They have telepathy. They can still finish and do things that nobody else can do. I mean, they're both, they have over 1,000 goals between them, career. You know, they're an unbelievable pairing. However, what you get up front, you lose defensively. Neither one of them is going to be racing back on defense. And they also, up front, they can't get, they're not, you know, it has to be a possession game with short passes to them. They're not going to be running and get behind a defender. They're not going to be sprinting to get behind a defender. So other teams have figured out, even, you know, Montreal, a team that was struggling, not Montreal, Toronto, mm-hmm. other teams have figured out ways, not Montreal. Montreal did not figure it out.
Right.
Other teams have figured out Philadelphia. Other teams have figured out how to, you know, keep the ball from Messi as much as they can, clog the middle, and then use speed. Yes. Because Miami, you're basically playing 8 field players defensively. So they've changed the goalkeeper back and forth, but they were still having very similar problems, which is in transition, they get burned a lot in transition. Now, on top of that, you've got the back line has already been a suspect mm-hmm. for a long time. Now, let's discuss what they have right now. Noah Allen is gone. Mm-hmm. Reguilón, who's supposed to be the starter at left back, he's injured. He was not at training yesterday. He's injured. Gonzalo Lujan, center back, he's injured with a calf injury. He was training off to the side yesterday. Mikael, the Brazilian center back that they brought from Palmeiras, who was doing pretty well, he was one of the better defenders at the beginning of the season, he's also injured with an ankle injury. He was training to the side with Lujan. So right now in the back, what they did last game is they put Casemiro. They moved Casemiro back and played 3 in back. They played Ian Frey, Casemiro, and Maxi Falcone. And they had Noah Allen. They had 4 in back, but they had Casemiro in the back. So they may do that again. Maybe they move Casemiro because they have more midfielders, move him back. But in other words, their back line has been sort of a revolving door, and they've had a lot of injuries. On top of that, there's the issue of no speed. On top of that is the issue of Messi and Suarez when they're on the field together. There's a defensive liability there. So that is the Achilles heel, if this team has one, is defensively. Offensively, yeah. They beat Philadelphia 6-4, you know, in the last game before the World Cup break. There were 10 goals in that game. So if you give up 4 goals, you should not win that game. But when they can score 6 and they can score 7, then they can win those games. So it turns into a shootout, and they win the shootout when they have Messi and Suarez in there. So it's an interesting team, but they do have to clean up their defense. Otherwise, I don't see, you know, I'll say this about Javier Mascherano. How did they win the cup last year? They were having the same issues last summer. He benched Suarez, and that was the most difficult thing that he had to do, because Suarez is Messi's best friend. Mm-hmm. And Suarez was also a former teammate of Mascherano on Barcelona. This was a very difficult decision that Mascherano had to do, but he decided to bench Suarez, and he put Silvetti and Allende flanking Messi. two guys who could run fast, get behind the defense, and play with Messi. Once they did that, they broke the MLS record for goals during the playoffs. They broke the MLS record and just rolled through the playoffs, creaming everybody to lift the cup. Now, the dilemma was, you know, seven games into the season here, the thought was that Suarez was going to retire.
Yeah.
Okay. Everyone assumed that Suarez was going to retire. And I'm sure Javier Mascherano also assumed that. But guess what? Suarez decided he wanted a swan song. He wanted one more season. And then Javier Mascherano is left with the same issue that he had at the end of last season, which is, okay, Suarez is coming back for a last hurrah. This is Messi's friend. He's coming for a last hurrah. I guess I have to play him. Yeah. Then they bring in Bertarame, who was not exactly what Javier Mascherano wanted to spend money on in the offseason. He wanted defensive help. That's where he wanted the money spent. They spent the money on a forward who was doing very well in Mexico, but that's not really what they needed most. So anyway, I think Javier Mascherano was very frustrated and walked out seven games into the season.
So does Keylor Gonzalez know what he's getting into and is just going to sit there and go, yeah, it's a chance for me to coach Inter Miami with Messi and all of this firepower? He knows that he's got to wear a hard hat to work every day.
Well, if he has a brain, if he has a brain, he has to know this, because this team is on its sixth coach in 7 years. Hmm. This club is only 7 years old and they've had six coaches. And you know, if Tata left after winning a supporter shield with them, best record of all time, and he leaves, and then Mascherano, 7 games after lifting the cup with this team and with a team that was presumably going to be better this year with whatever they thought is going to be better with who they brought, you know, and he walked out 7 games in. And then Hoyos starts out okay, but turns out not okay, and then he's gone. So this is a very difficult job. And I've spoken to coaches around the league that I've known for a long time, coaches, other MLS coaches, and they say this is a hard job. It's not just throw Messi and his friends out there and just let them play, because that's kind of what Hoyos was doing, to be honest. And that doesn't work. There are other coaches in MLS that are smart and good, and they figure out how to beat Inter Miami. You know what I mean? So you can't just, yes, Messi is unreal. He scored 4 goals the other day at 39 years old. He scored 8 goals during the World Cup and carried Argentina on his back to the final. He is the best of all time in my mind. There's no question what he does is insane. Absolutely insane. But you can't just throw him out there with a bunch of guys around him and figure that you're going to beat every MLS team and you're going to lift the cup. There has to be some strategy. There has to be some speed. There has to be some defense. And, you know, that's what Keylor Gonzalez is going to have to figure out. And I guess every coach that comes here thinks that they can do it. And somehow they're on their sixth coach in the last 7 years.
Crazy that, and then when you put it like that, six head coaches in 7 years, it's like, yeah, when you think about it and take a beat, you're like, yep, that is in fact what's going on. I know that it seems simplistic to where, okay, how do you defend against Inter Miami? You cut off the supply lines to Messi and you're physical with him and you bump him off his game, but all that seems to do is step on Superman's cape and get him mad at times. What kind of a matchup are you expecting this weekend down there at New Stadium with Atlanta United?
Well, I mean, from what I see, I think Atlanta does have speed. And by the way, Fafa Pico, believe me, he will be motivated with a capital M, because he was not, you know, he's a Miami guy and he was not really given that much opportunity to play with this group. He's going to be highly motivated in this game in his hometown. I think he has scored the game-winning goal in 2 of the last 3 games for Atlanta, if I'm correct. Mm-hmm. So he's going to be motivated. Atlanta has speed. Miami is not the speediest team, as we've just been talking about. I believe that Tata Martino is an excellent coach. I mean, having watched him for a whole year, and even when Messi was out for 2.5 months, he put in a bunch of young guys and brought up guys from the academy, and they stayed on top in first place the entire season of 2024. And I know that, you know, he's done really well in the past with Atlanta. I know he's trying to rebuild it now. So I have faith that Tata Martino knows, he knows this team extremely well, and he knows what to do. So there will be a game plan for sure. There will be a good game plan against a team that I believe is going to have Guillermo Hoyos on the sideline. I don't know how much influence Keely Gonzalez will have from the telephone or whatever from Argentina, where he still is. Mm-hmm. He hasn't even met with the team. As far as I know, we spoke to Yannick Bright mm-hmm. yesterday, and I said, oh, have you guys had any interactions with him? Has he done a Zoom calls with you guys or anything? No. He said, I have not spoken to him yet. So they've had this coach for a week, but at least Yannick Bright, he has not spoken to. I'm assuming maybe he has spoken to Lionel Messi, but he has not spoken to Yannick Bright yet as of yesterday. So again, you're going to have an Atlanta team with a plan from a coach who knows the club extremely well. They have speed. They're going to be motivated. And then you've got a Miami team. Now, I will say Miami did get a big boost of energy with that 7-1 win. They were really in a funk. They were down. The energy was bad. There was like a lack of urgency. They did not look good in the previous few games. And now they came off the field feeling energized. Also, the fact that there's a new coach, even though they haven't met him yet, the idea that the club has decided to invest in the remainder of this season, that they're not just throwing up their hands and giving up, I think that gave the team also a boost of energy. So I think it's going to be a really interesting game. I don't think it's going to be as simple as Miami's in second place and Atlanta is lower in the table. I think that this could be a tricky game for them. And by the way, Miami has dropped. They're still in second place, but they're 10 points behind Nashville. They were 2 points behind 2 weeks ago or so, and they dropped 8 points over the span of a week. So they're now 10 points behind in second place. As far as trying to get the supporter shield this year, it's going to be very difficult. Nashville is just winning everything. Miami's winning, but Nashville is winning, and Nashville is already 10 points ahead of them. So Miami's motivated. I think Atlanta will be motivated, and I think Atlanta will be prepared. I don't have any question that Atlanta is going to be prepared for this game.
And that is why we ring you up as soon as we know that something like this is going to go down, so we can get your intel and the PhD on Inter Miami. Opposition Research with you, Michelle Kaufman. It's always fantastic to catch up with you on everything that goes on down there. Hit the promo. Where can folks watch you on socials and Miami Herald and subscribe and all that stuff?
Yeah, we'd love for you to subscribe. You know, local media, we're the ones who cover the teams on a day-to-day basis. There's a writer in Atlanta who's covering the team. There's me. You know, there are a lot of cities don't even have MLS beat writers, but you're lucky to have one, and we're lucky to have it here. So MiamiHerald.com is where you can find my work. On Twitter, I'm at Kauf Sports, K-A-U-F Sports. Also, I have a weekly podcast called Inside Inter Miami. Inside Inter Miami. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, any other podcatchers that you have. So I'm all over the place. So that's where you can find me. If you want to know about Messi, what's going on with Messi, and what's going on with Inter Miami.
And we love to do that. May all the bylines be kind, and may you hit each and every one, and we will catch up with you soon, my friend. It's great to see you. Thanks for the intel. Always great to catch up with Michelle, find out what's going on when it comes to anything and everything in South Florida and with Inter Miami. This is the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you, sticking with our coverage of Inter Miami and Atlanta United. We check in with our friends at Apple TV. Callum Williams, very, very busy man, likes to be busy. And I'd love to know how many matches he's called this year. We get into what he was calling last year, whether it is domestic, Europe, all points in between. Callum Williams, very, very busy man right now, and the second half of his weekend with Kalen Carr is Atlanta United and Inter Miami. But we break down what's going on in Callum's life at present. We find out what he thinks about and what he thought about NYCFC in Nashville and his thoughts on Inter Miami and Atlanta United.
Morning, John. How are we doing?
Yeah, for those that follow you on social media, the question is, how are you and how is the car holding up?
Yeah, it's the car got there. That's the main thing. So for your listener that's unaware, I have spent the last couple of days driving my car from New York City to Kansas City, because that's where my wife and two kids, my family, are relocating. My wife is from Kansas City, and so we felt the need to be closer to family. And so, it's been a week, John. Honestly, it's been a week. And the week prior to that, I was over in England for a family funeral and had a family trip to Charleston, which meant I had a very much needed weekend off from MLS on Apple TV last week. Because the games have been crazy since the resumption of the season. Mm-hmm. So honestly, John, I'm not even 100% sure this is real right now. I don't know where I am. I don't know what time it is, what city it is. It's just one of those situations. But we're all good. We made it to Kansas City, only to then jump on a plane and fly straight back to New York City.
Unbelievable. And that my follow-up question is this, is how many matches do you call in an average year? Because I swear to God, somebody turns, or I turn and I'm flipping channels on any day of the week. Like, you're calling matches 9 days a week, and you're like calling matches in Europe, and you're over here, and you're with MLS. How many matches did you call last year? Do you remember?
It's a good question. I think it was close to 75, 80 last year. Mm-hmm. When, if you think about it, it's absurd, really. Mm-hmm. there's 52 weeks in the year. Mm-hmm. And for the majority of it last year, I was doing at least two. I think it's interesting because at what point does it become about quality as opposed to quantity? And this is the balance that I think all of us as broadcasters have to consider at some point. It's difficult when you're freelance and you're self-employed and those paychecks keep coming through. But it is something that I think we have to consider at some point. Now, what I've accepted, John, is that I'm a bit of a psychopath, and
guilty.
I just love football. Mm-hmm. And I'll go anywhere to commentate on games. It doesn't matter where it is. I think now, because we're so used to traveling, even before the Apple TV project, for those of us working in MLS, we were traveling almost every week, and so. I think my body has just gotten used to it, certainly over the last couple of years. And so the travel doesn't bother me. I think the travel is getting a lot easier. The travel times are getting shorter. And so you're right. You know, for example, there's a situation in a couple of months' time where I have a Friday night game over in Europe, and then I have a Saturday MLS assignment.
Whoa!
So, risking it a little bit, but I think it's doable. And that's the one thing that I want to actually achieve, and I've never really spoken about this publicly, John, but I do want to achieve a situation where I'm sort of operating in both, where I'm operating on both sides of the pond.
Yeah.
Because I think it's achievable. I don't know anyone that really does it. Maybe Derek Ray is the only one that I can really think of off the top of my head that does it, but he doesn't really do a lot in the US anymore. And so I think it's doable. And so I'm just now sort of on the start of that journey of being able to do it consistently. I've been working in France a lot more regularly. And what's actually interesting is this move to Kansas City, because we're going to have the family support that we need, because my wife travels a lot as well. It's actually going to allow me to go over to Europe a lot more. It just means I'll have a few more hours on a plane, which is fine.
Can you sleep on a plane?
No, I can't. And it really, really, honestly, mate, it really drives me nuts, because that would be the most useful tool that I could ever wish to have. And I've tried taking sleeping pills and, you know, unless I am just absolutely zonked and have done it plenty of times when you get on a flight and you've had, you know, 3-4 hours of sleep, sometimes I can nod off then, but it'll never be comfortable sleep at all. No.
I can go to sleep on a plane during the pre-flight instructions. I always ask for a window seat so I can go up against the fuselage.
Mm-hmm.
And literally the second I sit down, you get the engine, you get the Rolls-Royce engine hum, which is standard, and it's just that constant noise.
Yeah.
I can be out in the pre-flight and I'm good for like, I'm a good nap in, and I can't nap under normal circumstances. Like if the sun is up, I can't nap. But if you get me on a plane, I'm out.
Wow. So what's the secret?
Being incredibly and totally tired at the time. I honestly think it's the engine noise in a plane, because it's that constant hum. It's almost like white noise. Like if you ever
right.
like white noise or brown noise when you're trying to get to bed or something, or trying to drown out thunderstorms for animals, literally that hum of that engine literally is just so constant that it's just like, boom, I'm out.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'll have to, maybe we have to have another further conversation, because I will do anything right now to figure out how to sleep on planes, because as insinuated, it would be very helpful for me right now.
No doubt. You've got a doubleheader this weekend, and I will preface our MLS conversation by saying, I don't know if Kirk told you, but Friday, 10 o'clock Eastern hour is what we refer to as the hour of chaos. Whomever wants to come in and vent their spleen can come in and vent their spleen. Like I said, Ross came in ahead of you. That was scheduled. You're coming in. It's scheduled. Devin Kerr, God knows when he'll dive in. He could be in an airport concourse someplace. He'll dive in. Literally, it is an open invitation in the 10 o'clock hour to come and crash and vent your spleen and move on. If there's like anything bugging you, there's a travel story, just, you know, hey, I want to come in. This is bugging me. I'm going to come in here and I'm going to annoy, you know, everybody else that's on with you as an interview. So literally, it is an open door policy. Friday hour at 10. Your week starts in, when do you have to head to the 110x68 over at Yankee Stadium?
I'll probably head over, what time is it now? It's about 10:30, so I'll probably head over probably about 4:30, I would assume. So okay. I've got some time to make some notes, and given the chaotic nature of the week, I do have a couple of more notes to make for today, when I'm doing New York City FC against Nashville, and then, as you mentioned, tomorrow doing Inter Miami against Atlanta United as well.
Yeah, and so Nashville is right now, they're almost turning into a horizon job in the Eastern Conference, and it's you get one and two, but you don't get them playing each other. You get them on consecutive days, so you'll get an interesting test case here. Going into that pinball machine or that futsal field or the U-12, whatever you want to call it, in the Bronx, interesting challenge for Nashville because NYC's used to it. What are you looking at in this one?
Yeah, but it's interesting, John, because if you think about how Nashville is set up and their tight, compact nature from a defensive point of view, I wonder actually if the tight nature of the field at Yankee Stadium actually does them a bit of a favor because it's all compact anyway. I know BJ Callahan obviously likes to get the ball into the wide areas as quickly as possible, wide in inverted commas, because I'm not entirely sure he does, because the likes of Saad and Co maneuver inside very quickly. Right. And also, I'm not entirely sure there are actually wide channels at Yankee Stadium as well.
Correct.
So, you know, I think this is going to be really interesting because New York City FC have just got to start winning games. Mm-hmm. I know they went on a good run just after the return to play, but the last couple of weeks have not been good to them at all. It's no winning six for them now, and I think they're probably a little too heavily reliant on the new players that have come in.
Right.
But they're certainly too heavily reliant on Fernandez Macau, and we spoke to Pascal Janssen yesterday or the day before, and he essentially admitted that they're a bit too reliant on Fernandez Macau. And so now bringing in the two new players, that creates this almost over-reliance on them now to deliver. And that's a little bit unfair, I think, for two players that are coming in. One's a 20-year-old kid from Palmeiras who was never going to get a kick. Luigi, very good centre-forward, big frame. is someone that I think, if given time, could be quite good for New York City FC. But he's a link-up player as well, and I think actually someone like him is going to benefit somebody like Nico Fernandez-Macao and all of the supporting cast that have played off of the centre-forward over the course of the last year, let's be honest, for New York City FC. The one bit of positive news I did hear about NYCFC from an attacking perspective is that Alonso Martinez is starting to train this week. I would be absolutely stunned if he's available today. He's off the injury reports, which I thought was interesting. But there's no way. There's no way. He hasn't played since November. But Pascal Janssen did say to us that, look, if it was up to him, he would play. He's ready to go, according to him. But you've got to be so careful, haven't you, with some of these major injuries. And another injury for Alonso Martinez would be detrimental, devastating to his career. So you just got to be so careful. But, I mean, I think New York City FC are a good team. Traore is one of the new players that came in from FC Basel for a decent chunk of change, I think needs a little bit of time to settle. But I think it's going to be interesting. I can see this being a Friday night thriller. I could see it being a 3-2 type game. Even though Nashville defensively have been wonderful over the course of the season, especially away. They've only conceded 6 away goals all year. But I can see that there's always chaos at Yankee Stadium. And I haven't done a game at Yankee Stadium for about a year or so. But there's always chaos here. And I think it's going to be a relatively chaotic game for sure.
It's you and Kalen?
Yes, it is. Myself and Kalen Carr, yeah.
Okay, so then I'm hopping in the imaginary booth with you when you're cutting your open. And you and Kalen will have your players to watch, one each side. Knowing, I imagine, who those individuals are, give me someone who is not going to be in the open as a player to watch that you would have as a player to watch on each side.
It's a very good question. So I think there's players that are not often mentioned are often defenders, right? And so I think Maxwell Waldzi, I think the Ghanaian, is someone that we've really got to keep a close eye on and a particular attention to, because he's a big boy, is a threat on set pieces, which are always interesting at Yankee Stadium, as we keep mentioning, because of the field dimensions. So I think he could be one to watch. I'm interested to see Elias Saad. I've not seen too much of him. Tunisian international, played 2 of Tunisia's 3 games at the World Cup. He's on loan from Augsburg. Did very well with St. Pauli in the German Bundesliga as well. PJ Callahan said to us he's been a target of theirs for a long time. And he's not your traditional sort of winger, you know, get to the byline, play it across. He can do that, but he's one of these sort of modern-day wingers where instead of going down the byline, he'll actually cut inside. And he's actually very good at playing in between the lines. I've seen some clips from when he was with Augsburg, and he looks very, very good at that. And so I would say from Nashville's perspective, I think it's a toss-up of a handful. But let's go for Elias Saad. I think that could be really interesting. And from a New York City FC perspective, I mean, I didn't realise... I knew they had some injuries, John, but I didn't realise how many they had. So Kai Truwen, Maxi Morales, Alonso Martinez, Hannes Wolf, Aidan O'Neill, Keaton Parks. That's 6 first-team starters right there, you know? That's going to decimate any team across the world, but certainly in this league, it's going to be really difficult. So my assumption is that James Sands will drop into centre-half again, possibly, unless Raul Gustavo is good to go from the get-go. If Pascal Janssen fancies him anymore, I don't know. I'm going to go with James Sands because I'm not entirely sure where he's going to play, whether it's going to be centre-half or central midfield. If it's midfield, I'm assuming he'll have Andreas Pereira alongside him. The supporting cast has always caught my eye with New York City FC. Fernandez-Macao is now a part of that, not necessarily playing as a centre-forward anymore. Right. You know, he scored his first goal in 5 against Toronto last week, and he took it very, very well. It's the best goal-scoring season of his career, and so I actually think there's an argument to actually leave him where he is in this false nine position, because it's problematic for centre-halves operating against the false nine regardless, but certainly the way that he moves and operates I think there's every argument to leave him there. But they like this boy, Luigi. Like I said, on loan from Palmeiras. He's not going to get a game at Palmeiras right now because of the addition of Vitor Roque from Barcelona and the array of attacking players they have there under Abel Ferreira. So I think there's a couple of players that we could, again, focus on. But it's very easy to focus on Fernandes Macau and Luigi and what have you. But I think James Sands and his return could be absolutely integral to New York City FC in their season.
And now we're in added time with Callum, and we'll try not to dilly-dally too much because after this match is over, you hop on a plane, I imagine, out of Newark or JFK or something like that, and cheaper flights out of Newark. You go down to MIA. You race into New Stadium for Atlanta United and Messi and friends. Mm. Same question. Amauto and Mbolo are eligible for selection once again. They're not on the day before sheet. Mm-hmm. With Atlanta United, you know, you're bringing in all these new pieces. You're getting some sandpaper on the back line. Back line for Inter Miami has always been in question. Maxi Falcone's got a great head of lettuce, but his wheels aren't what they used to be. What are you looking at in this one?
I'm not sure of the availability of Mikael for Inter Miami. If he's available, that's absolutely key for them, because for me, he's in the conversation of best centre-half in Major League Soccer. Was terrific with Houston Dynamo for several years when they won the Open Cup. Did really well with Palmeiras, but to my understanding, told his agent he wants to come and play in the US, which is a good sign for the league when players like that are saying that. And so I'm assuming if he's available, then that's great. Without obviously focusing on, as you said, the likes of Messi and Casemiro and Rodrigo de Paul and what have you, I'm interested to see how, and this isn't necessarily just with regards to today, I'm interested to see over the course of the last third of the season how Germán Berterame is. Mm-hmm. I did that game when he suffered the concussion in Montreal.
Ooh, yeah.
Oh, my word, John. It was scary. At one point, I thought the game was going to be abandoned because it was a good sort of 15-20 minute delay. There was an ambulance that rushed onto the field as well. I've never seen that in person before. I just wonder how delicate he is. We all know he's a monstrous goal scorer. And when given service, as he inevitably will be with, as you say, Messi and friends, he could be a major, major difference for them. Lovren's Delanoir, I think, could be somebody to keep an eye on as well moving forward. But yeah, I mean, my pick would be Berterame there to see what goes on. With regards to Atlanta, look, I'm going to state the obvious a little bit by saying I think Paulo Díaz is a tremendous addition. Such a force at River Plate. Mm-hmm. Really, really good centre-half. Exactly what Atlanta United needed in terms of stability, in terms of physicality, in terms of leadership. It's a really top signing. And this is where I think someone like Tata Martino still comes in handy, because I'm not entirely sure, and I say this with all due respect, I don't think Paulo Díaz leaves River Plate if Tata Martino isn't the Atlanta United manager.
Right.
And so I think that's a terrific one to look at. For me, Brill Mbolo, that's a stunning signing. That's a really intriguing signing, because honestly, it could go either way. Very much like the Emmanuel Latte-Lart situation, I think Brill Mbolo will be more effective because he's much more of a target centre-forward than Latte-Lart is. But Mbolo also has the pace and speed to get in behind and stretch as well. So I actually think he's a bit better than Latte-Lart is. And I've commentated on him twice. Remember commentating on Rennes when they were at Paris Saint-Germain in December last year. And then I saw him when Rennes were at Monaco in January. And he was very, very good. Very, very good player. I'm not entirely sure that Atlanta United's system is set up for a centre forward. Yeah. Tata Martino, I'm sure, will tinker appropriately, because he has to, because you don't spend the money that you have done on somebody like Mbolo and have him sitting on the bench. So I'm interested to see it. Miguel Almirón, I'm sure, will be much happier having an outlet, having somebody to play off of as well, because as sort of tricky as it is to deal with the front line that was with Atlanta United when there wasn't really a natural centre-forward, this will feel so much more natural. And I think you'll start to see Miguel Almirón flourish a bit more as well.
And same for, and I will add Alexi Miranchuk to that discussion as well, especially as a point guard helping out, working Mbolo as well. Let's see. So is everything moved officially to Kansas City, or do you still have to move things from New York?
I've got one box, which is here. And so what's interesting is I actually had to, when I landed last night in LaGuardia, I actually had to go back to the old apartment and get the last box, which was quite emotional. You know, you've moved before. I'm sure several of your listeners have moved before. It's very strange when you go back into a place that you considered home and it's an empty shell, you know. And it's quite emotional, actually, John, because for me, my kids were born there. My kids were born in New York City, and they took their first steps in that place. And walking around the old neighborhood, it was quite emotional, actually. So New York City is always going to be very, very special to us, for sure. But Kansas City is, like I said, it's where my wife's from. It's where I first came when I first moved over to the U.S. as well. I was the voice there for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're excited to see what Kansas City has to offer, for sure.
And we're excited to hear your doubleheader tonight at the 110x68 and with Atlanta United and Inter Miami coming up on Saturday. Tailwinds and calm seas, my friend, especially with a back-to-back travel day. Thank you for doing this. I know we kept you into added time. If I need a note to get you back into class without any repercussion, just let me know. And like I said, Friday's 10 o'clock hour. Crash. Have fun. You're bored. Always great to welcome someone new to SDHAM, and that was Callum's first visit, believe it or not. That was Callum's first visit to SDHAM, and obviously the welcome mat is out for any time that he wishes to visit. This is the best of SDHAM on the Soccer Down Here Network. John Nelson here with you. Batting third this week, Ross Smith, who is paired with Tony Husband in Apple TV's coverage of Major League Soccer. And so Ross is also in the process of moving, and so we find out what's going on with Ross on a back porch in Ontario. We find out what's going on in his life, and we also find out what's going on with Portland and with Minnesota United coming up on Saturday. Here's our conversation on a back porch with Ross Smith. Yeah, you're good. I'm just worried about seeing your smiling face on the workout. So what is this I hear about an address change?
Yeah, I'm up, which is why my service might not be so smooth right now. I'm up in Canada. I'm originally... Yeah. Born in Canada. Been living in the States for the last, oh my gosh, 20 years or so. And so it was just time. We've got a couple of young girls, and my wife is in the soccer world as well. And it was just a great time to move up to Toronto. So we made the move the last couple of days. It's been crazy. Wow. I've got my Tim Hortons coffee. Oh. And then I head off to Portland tonight to get there for the weekend. So I'm not sure if you've spent any time up here, but it's just beautiful.
No, full disclosure, I was the U.S. correspondent for the Score Television Network when it existed.
No way. That's incredible.
Yeah.
How did you go about getting that, doing that?
Well, yeah, well, here's that story. And I guess this goes to story time with John while you have your – see, now you don't have any Timbits with you, do you?
I don't. I let my daughter have one. She's up and having the weekend at grandma's. I let her have one. I did. I've got the I've got a bit of pounds, a bit of the winter weight that I'm still shedding.
So here's story time with John. When we had, at the time, it was a killer roster. We had Elliot Friedman, Greg Sansoni, Martin Geyer, Adnan Virk, Tim McAuliffe, Sid Sixero, all under the same roof. And Elliot was leaving to go to CBC. And his gig became open, and after, you know, working, you know, NHL at the time in the southeastern U.S. with them, I flew up, and I actually applied for the position. So that's how that kind of all started, and was a part of that, and finished top three in the March Madness poll.
Wow.
in the consecutive years, and never let Adnan forget that. You know, he was right there with him, and Sid picked Iowa when they got bounced in the first round of the March Madness. So now we had a hell of a roster, and it was a blast to be a part of that. I mean, what Patricia Bowl and who's in Winnipeg now? Sarah Orleski. Yeah, I mean, it was
okay.
All Yeah, so now it was a star-studded roster, and you go up and you hang out with those folks, and I'd go down the street and we'd go to the Gretzky's and have steak right there off of King Street. So no, I'm right there with you. But
that was how long ago?
Entirely too long. Back in the days of black and white television, actually. You
know? Yeah.
When Gordon Lightfoot did Canadian Railroad Trilogy on the anniversary of Canada as a country, that's how long ago that was for me working it.
It's incredible. That's so neat, John. Those stories. That as I'm driving from our place up to Grandma's, just going through my sort of upbringing and life here. Just such a great time. I'm Gordon Lightfoot, you know, mm-hmm. on the radio track playing as I'm driving up.
Dude,
nostalgia today.
Don't even get me started on the Hip. I am probably one of the few Hip fans south of the Mason-Dixon line.
Interesting. Really?
And I donate to the Terry Fox Foundation every year. I have more Hip stuff than any human being should have south of the Mason-Dixon line in the southeastern United States. Look, I converted the boss to being a tragically Hip fan. She didn't know who Gord Downie was. And it's like, okay, so here's what you're getting into. And, you know, literally she will dial up the channel on Sirius XM and, you know, we're on the road and she'll know to hit that channel. And we get lost. Look, she called date night for the 10th anniversary of the farewell concert from Kingston a couple of weekends ago.
Okay.
That's what I have done in this house. The one thing that you can put on the board is I've converted the boss to being a tragically Hip fan.
Amazing.
Before we actually talk soccer, Callum Williams coming in 10 minutes. Give me your top five tragically Hip song.
Oh my God. You're ahead by a century. Okay. Bob Cajun.
Okay.
Wheat Kings.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. What else would I? Oh my gosh.
Little Bones?
You've got me. Little Bones. Oh, can you get, why am I blanking? What about you? Can you give me, I'm down one here.
Yeah.
What do you have?
I'll go ahead by a century because that was, and that one rocketed because it was the last song that they played in Kingston.
Yeah.
And because of the last line and where Gord says, and disappointing you is bringing me down.
Disappointing. He's getting
So that has stuck with me. So it is ahead by a century, 50 Mission Cap.
Okay. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I will go Small Town Bring Down off of the first album.
Okay.
And literally you're gonna have to go find that one because that's
yes, that was I'm gonna put that, these tunes on my way back to on the way to the airport from here.
Then I will go with Ahead by a Century, Wheat Kings, Small Town Bring Down, and then I will go off of Man Machine Poem. I will go Tired as F, but that's not the actual name of the song.
Okay, yeah.
The F word is extended, and we would get the explicit rating if we use that one. There are so many that I could slide into that fifth slot, but Little Bones is there for me at number five. Small Town Bring Down for me off of the first album is the obscure one that I bring into the pile here.
I'm gonna have to put that on the way home. That's really cool. That's really cool. Your connection with all that.
I mean, Road Apple. Look, Road Apples I found when I was visiting my dad in Southern California. I got Road Apples on cassette discount in a record store, and I burned that cassette to the ground, and I got my dad humming bass lines that week. I've got Gord Downie and Hip t-shirts all over the place, and I know that we could have a separate discussion. We need to just have a separate discussion about the Tragically Hip. Anyway.
Anytime. Right. Please have me on again with that.
Dude, you know how to come in. So whenever you're bored on a Friday and you're not at an airport yet, you know how to be in here. On the 10 o'clock hour is the hour of chaos, and I don't know who's coming in. Like, I know Callum's coming in after you, but, dude, if you're bored, come on in.
I would love it.
The matchup that you got is PDX. You got Portland this weekend. What has Study Hall been like getting ready for that one?
It's always Portland's always an easy one to get ready for. I'm a former player. I spent a lot of years there on the broadcast side of it. So naturally, for all the different games we cover every weekend, I'm always keeping an eye on, even if I'm not covering Portland, I'm always keeping an eye on what's happening there and the ties that I have within the club as well, which runs pretty deep. So to that, the study of it, you know, it's going to be really interesting. We chatted with new manager Marty Cifuentes yesterday. Really switched on. Great personable person. We dove into the changes he's looking to make with the team. And you know, really, John, he's come in what would have been a really good time if he came in 2 months earlier when Phil Neville was shown the door. Instead, because of visa and I guess how things worked and for them to go and find the right manager as Jack Cassidy took over. You know, the job that Jack Cassidy and Liam Ridgewell, Ridgie, former player, was sort of promoted to help Jack Cassidy on the training ground. The two of them did a marvelous job and made life really difficult for Marty Cifuentes to come in, and he admitted that. You know, it's not so easy then when the team's winning and doing really well and individuals are performing. Look at Kevin Kelsey, was just sold to Rangers for what was it, 13 million plus add-ons. You know, that's all out of what Jack Cassidy and Ridgie did primarily. And so, anyways, he's lost his striker now. So there's things going against Marty Cifuentes. They lost their last match at Providence Park to Austin, a tough one. You know, so things are going against him right now. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they respond. His sort of style, does it start to come out more? It's pressure mounting on him this weekend, I would say.
And without Kevin Kelsey, any idea how they're going to line up offensively against a team that really doesn't know how to score in Minnesota United?
Yeah, I wonder. I think, you know, the experience, Vincent Janssen, I don't know if he's, you know, starting fits. He's more been coming off the bench. He's your natural pick. He also, Cifuentes, he experimented with Christopher Velde coming off the left wing and playing in that false nine position. I don't think that really suits him because he is really at his best when he's cutting in from the left wing and being able to you know, cut in on his right and have a goal, or he can go to the bar line and cut it back. So I think he's got a bit of a problem there. And the fact that you've sold the goal man Kelsey and you haven't brought in anybody else, I think that's been hugely criticized in Portland right now, that, you know, well, what are we doing here? Portland's a club that's pushing for trophies, but you've gone and sold the top striker, which was a great deal. I mean, the amount of money that they got paid for Kelsey and what they sold, but still, to not replace him with somebody, I think people in Portland, I think Ned Grabovoy, GM for Portland Timbers, is taking a bit of heat that he's having to navigate this week.
On the flip side, Minnesota, they seem to, it's weird with Minnesota, where if you play Minnesota at home at Allianz, you've got a good chance of knocking them off, but they play better on the road than they do at home. They're offensively challenged. I'll use that phrase. So, but what are you seeing in Minnesota other than a lack of goals?
Yeah, I still see Cam Knowles progressing this team from what they were under Troy Lessain, Troy Lessain was very open about it. I mean, they didn't want to possess. They wanted to get the ball forward and always try and land that uppercut. Whereas Cam Knowles this year is trying to, let's have other ideas. Let's get the ball down and play. And that comes with growing pains. It comes with, you know, players that's available. They haven't brought in, Cam Knowles hasn't been armed with these big names coming into the team as well. Joaquin Pereira is, playing really well of late since the World Cup break. He's really come to life, scored 4 goals since the World Cup break and is looking more like it. Kelvin Yeboah up front. And so there is talent there, but reinforcements, that there's not an awful lot. And I think Cam Knowles he's done a good job with what's available to him. And the fact that their GM now has transferred to Austin, and so the guy making all the big decisions is out the door. We're going to speak to Cam in a few hours. I'll be really interested just to see, you know, how that's impacted things. And the transfer window wasn't great for Minnesota. So, you know, Cam Knowles is going to have to figure out what to do with what he has. It's also an interesting story with Cam Knowles returning to Portland. I think that's always a neat storyline that flies under the radar. Cam Knowles played for Portland. He had, John, what was, and I was teammates with Cam, maybe one of the most horrific injuries I've ever seen for a player. He had a leg break, which was back in the USL days, where he needed a halo around his leg with rods going with rods going through it. He was at risk of losing his leg. It was a tackle in Montreal, and the guy still came back to play. It took about 2 or 3 years, I think, and he came back to play when he was at risk of losing his leg. It's still to this day, I think Cam will admit he's got tingling at the bottom of his foot. Anyways, for him to come back to Portland and what he accomplished there as a player, to one of the greatest comebacks, that I would say, just to be able to play soccer again, is remarkable. So I think it'll be an emotional one for Cam to return, and given the playoff stakes as well. Both teams are so tight. Minnesota desperately need the 3 points, but so do Portland.
It's you and T Husband, right?
It is. I like that, T Husband. Yes.
T Husband. And just make sure that you mention Plymouth Argyle at any opportunity.
that's amazing. Yes.
So before I let you go and get back to your coffee and get back to your move, I know that you you and Tony have the players to watch kind of a thing. And yes. When we do the open. So I'm T Husband, and we're sitting in the booth. And give me players to watch that aren't the players to watch. Give me like the number twos that would be close in the voting for each team that will not make players to watch.
Okay, that's a great one. I think Caicedo for Portland, the holding center midfielder. I think there's a lot of onus on him for Portland, how they play out. They haven't been great on the ball, and Marti Cifuentes has said like we need to be better. I think it starts with him. I like Markanic as the left back. I'll go with that. You know, goal scoring left back, because he's to see what, you know what, let me go the other side. Let me go Kyle Duncan, because I think Kyle Duncan against Velde, Christopher Velde, will be an interesting battle. So I'll go Kyle Duncan on the right hand side. He likes to get forward, but how forward can he get with Velde coming down his side?
The pride of Guelph, Ontario. Ross,
look. I hope there's a day we can share a pint up here in Guelph. You know, somewhere around the Toronto area would be great with you, John.
The Golden Horseshoe, the our own Guelph Storm, Ross Smith.
That's fantastic.
Be safe getting out there, and have a great call, my friend. And you know, you can crash anytime in the 10 o'clock hour on a Friday.
I'm going to do that. That'd be great.
That's what we're here for. So just safe travels, and knock it out, and say hi to T Husband for us.
Yeah, say hi to Kyle as well. He just made a big move back to Kansas City. So
yeah.
So you might catch him on the road.
Oh, yeah. Believe it or not, he's in a hotel room in New York City, and this is where we're going to catch up with him. So it's going to be fun. Cool. We'll see you soon, my friend.
Cool. We'll see you soon. Thanks so much, John.
All right. There goes Ross. And okay. So, all right. So, Callum, do me a favor. I see you in the green room. Can you turn your device 1/4 turn? Because you're sideways and you're like, your left ear is hugging the floor at the moment. And so, as much as I would, and I said, literally just, you can turn your, just like, oh, he had it and he, okay. So, it's the fun with hotels. I think we get to see Callum Williams for the first time in a hotel in New York City in 5 years. This is what I was told by our buddy Kirk Reynolds at Major League Soccer. The first time he's in a hotel room in NYC in 5 years. Busiest man in show business. And there he is. Here we go. All right. So the man, this is a debut, by the way, for Callum. And we've seen Callum a lot in the press box at Mercedes-Benz. And this is a debut of Callum here on the morning show. Good to see you, my friend. I'm going to check in. You know now how to dial in. It's great to see you. I'm glad that you finally have the maiden voyage here with us. Go get some brunch or something. We'll see you soon, my friend.
Appreciate it. Thank you, John.
Always great to catch up with Ross and find out what is going on in his life and find out what's up next for him and T-Husband on a weekly basis. This is the Best of SDHAM from the Soccer Down Here Network. Thanks to our friends at Apple TV. Kirk Morrison has been the one to orchestrate and let everybody know that Freestyle Friday is exactly that, especially in the 10 o'clock hour. Great to catch up with Ross Smith. Great to catch up with Callum Williams. And from the Miami Herald, catching up with one of the busiest folks in all of Major League Soccer. It is Michelle Kaufman, the beat writer for Inter-Miami. Quick notes. It is a 6:30 start for Five Stripes Countdown. Abe Gordon cast the thousands, 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. 7:40 kick with Mike and Jason. And then after that, it'll be yours truly and Abe for the full-time report to let you know what happened in the matchup with Atlanta United and Messi and friends. And believe it or not, not a whole lot of time to sit and wait and find out what's going on, because the Purple Team is coming to Mercedes-Benz Stadium in the midweek, and we'll let you know what's going on with anything and everything going on in Major League Soccer here on SDHAM. Monday through Friday, 9:05 a.m. Eastern Time. You can watch on the Soccer Down Here YouTube channel, on X, on Twitch, and also at the NSBN Network. So thanks for hanging out with us for another round of SDHAM here at 92.9 The Game in the podcast section and the Odyssey app. Mucha Platia, all played safe. We will catch up with you again next week.